Psalm 132 starts out with the words, "O Lord, remember David." In Acts 13, Paul is preaching a sermon. And in that sermon, he is going back into Jewish history and he gives a brief synopsis of where they came from to Christ. And in the midst of that, it talks about David and how it was that Saul was set aside and David was put into place as being God's anointed one, the king. And in that passage in Acts 13, about verse 22, it says that he was a man who sought after God's own heart. And that phrase, David being a man who sought after God's own heart, is one that even the most casual Bible students recognizes and has heard it before. But it's also one that's often overshadowed. It's overshadowed by David's adulterous situation with Bathsheba. And so people will begin to wonder, how is it that David could be a man after God's own heart and yet do something like that? And David's family was so much turned upside down when his own son rapes his own stepsister. And then another of David's sons goes and kills him, and the whole family's in turmoil. How could this man be a man after God's own heart? And as I was studying this past week, a lot of different things dawned on me that I hadn't really thought about in a long time. David was a man after God's own heart. He really was. He was a man who loved the Lord. And in spite of whatever the circumstances was, and even his own faults and failures, he was a man who sought after God's own heart. And this psalm is a beautiful one in the first several verses that calls to mind to remember who David was, and for very good reason. This is the longest of the Psalms of Ascent. Remember, the Psalms of Ascent started in Psalm 120 and go all the way through Psalm 134. And these were the psalms that they would sing as they would have their pilgrimages three times a year in going to Jerusalem. This one being so long, we're going to break it up into two parts. We're going to do half this week and half the next. And so we're just going to look at the first part of it, because I think it's good to break it down into these two parts. This first part being, remember who David was. The second part, remember the promise that was made to David. And I think in both of these two parts of this particular psalm, I think there's a lot that we can draw out of it. But first, think about, what was it that made David so very special as a king? What made David so special as a servant? You remember David as a young lad when he would go out and fought with Goliath. He said, "This battle belongs to the Lord." Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he would defy the armies of the living God? God does not save with spear. David, from a very young age, was one who loved God. When he became king, all the other kings thereafter were usually compared to, how do they measure up in comparison to David? They sought after the Lord God with all their heart, as David did, or they forsook all that God had told them, unlike David did. And he became the measuring standard for everyone else. But what was it that made him so special? So let's remember David this morning. Psalm 132, verse 1. "Lord, remember David and all his afflictions." And I want to ask you, what do you think of when you think about David's afflictions? Because that word was strange in comparison to what's being talked about throughout the psalm. Remember David and all his afflictions. Many times, if I were to say to you, what were David's afflictions, you would probably come up with things like, well, he was persecuted by Saul relentlessly. He had spears thrown at him. He was always on the run, not just from Saul, but also from many of his enemies. He was always in battles fighting against the Philistines. His own son led a rebellion against him. David had a lot of afflictions, but none of those have anything to do with what the psalm is talking about. Verse 2 of this psalm points out what David's afflictions were all about. "Lord, remember David and all his afflictions, how he swore to the Lord and vowed to the mighty one of Jacob, 'Surely I will not go into the chamber of my house or go up to the comfort of my bed. I will not give sleep to my eyes or slumber to my eyelids until I find a place for the Lord, a dwelling place for the mighty one of Jacob.'" If you turn over to 1 Chronicles 22, this was David's affliction. David's affliction was one that was self-imposed. David was one who was told that he would not be the one who would build the temple for God. But David, knowing that his son Solomon was going to be the one to do this, started making provisions and started making things ready for the day in which God had a place where he could be worshipped by all of his people in one place and not be distracted by their enemies. David sought for such an occasion as that. In 1 Chronicles 22, in verse 14, "Indeed, I have taken much trouble." I want to stop there for just a moment. That phrase, "taken much trouble," is the same word as affliction. It is the same word, the same phrase, as is used for the Hebrew children as they were being afflicted by the Egyptians. David says that I have taken much pain, much trouble, much anxiety. I have afflicted myself to make sure that these things are going to be prepared for and made ready. 1 Chronicles 22 and verse 14, continuing on. "I've taken much trouble to prepare for the house of the Lord 100,000 talents of gold, 1,000,000 talents of silver, and bronze and iron beyond measure, for it is so abundant. I have prepared timber and stone also, and you may add to them. Moreover, there are workmen with you in abundance, woodsmen and stonecutters and all types of skillful men for every kind of work, of gold and silver and bronze and iron. There is no limit. Arise and begin working, and the Lord will be with you." David also commanded all the leaders of Israel to help Solomon his son, saying, "Is not the Lord your God with you? And has He not given you rest on every side? For He has given the inhabitants of the land into my hand, and the land is subdued before the Lord and before His people. Now set your heart and your soul to seek the Lord your God. Therefore arise and build the sanctuary of the Lord your God, to bring the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and the holy articles of God into the house that is to be built for the name of the Lord." That is what afflicted David. To have a place where God could be worshipped. To have a place where the Ark of the Covenant could go into one place and to be there. To no longer be, as the children of Israel were up until this time, nomadic people. Always traveling around. And even when they established themselves in the Promised Land, they still had problems from their enemies, especially the Philistines. And even the tribes among themselves had their own leaders, and they would fight and quarrel and have civil wars that were constantly going about. But David settled those things because he set his heart to make it so. That in and of itself is enough lesson for any of us. That I can have peace and I can have that harmony and I can have what it is that God would have me to have in my life if I set my heart, if I will just afflict myself in order to get it. To just have that quiet. To just have that one central place where God can be worshipped and not have that worship interrupted and distracted with other things. I wonder if I've ever beaten my soul, if I've even beaten myself enough to make it that way. How much effort that would go into it. That's what this psalm is calling to remind them of, is of this affliction that David had to make sure that this was so. He swore to the Lord, he vowed to God, that I will not go to the chamber of my house. I will not go to the comfort of my bed. More important than sleep and slumber, than rest, then relaxation, was to find a place for the Lord, a dwelling place for the Mighty One of Jacob. If you go back in history, and I want us to go this morning, go through the history of what it was like for David as he was coming up. 1 Samuel chapter 4. 1 Samuel 4, if you'll turn there with me. 1 Samuel 4. You remember that there was a priest named Eli who had two sons, Hophni and Phinehas. His two sons did not walk in the ways of God as priests. And when people would go up and offer sacrifices, they would take some for themselves. And they did a lot of other discouraging and disparaging and disgusting things in the presence of God. And Eli did not restrain them. Because of that, it was prophesied that Eli and his sons were going to die and the ark was going to be taken from them. In chapter 4, you have a battle that's taking place, and they're routed. They're being defeated. And they wonder, why is it that we're being defeated? Oh, we didn't bring the ark with us. Now, what they were supposed to do was to first inquire of God to see if they should even go out to battle. Then if God said, yes, go out to battle, then you take the Ark of the Covenant with them. They didn't inquire of God. They just went out to battle. They're being beaten. And so then they decide, oh, we forgot our good luck charm. The Ark of the Covenant, so let's go get it. So they come back in chapter 4 with that. The Philistines are afraid when they hear that this is going on, and yet they still defeat the Israelites, and they take the Ark of the Covenant, and Eli and his sons are killed. In chapter 5, you see that the Philistines now have the Ark of the Covenant. And when they have this Ark of the Covenant, everywhere that it goes, the people start breaking out in diseases and these boils on their bodies, these horrible inflictions upon them. And so they take it to another place, and there the same thing happens. And this goes on for a while, and they start saying, you know what, it's because this thing belongs to the God of the Israelites. Because they had even set it up in the temple of Dagon, their God. And the next morning they go in there, and Dagon's laying face down next to the Ark. So they prop him back up. And the next morning they come back, he's down on the ground again, but this time his palms are gone and his head is gone. So they're like, okay, something strange is going on. So they say, well, let's do this. Let's not make a cart. Let's put it on that cart, and let's take this calf that's not been weaned yet, and we'll see if it'll just go back to Israel, because this would not leave their children. The children and the mother would not want to be separated unless there was something purposely going on here. And it does go to Israel. And when they see it coming, obviously they're very excited about this. And so they go ahead and decide that we're just going to handle it, because they haven't been treating it with respect in a long period of time. And depending on what version you're reading, something like 50,000 people die as a result of that. And it's a discouraging time when the ark comes back. And in 1 Samuel chapter 7 and verse 2, it says, "So it was that the ark remained in Kirjath-Jearim a long time. It was there 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord." So for a period of over 20 years, the ark has not been in the presence of God's people. David comes onto the scene, and one of the things that David wants to do is to return the ark to Israel, because he knows that that is the place it's supposed to be, or Jerusalem rather. And in 2 Samuel chapter 6, this is that occasion that after this extremely long period of time that they made for the ark of God a new cart in verse 3. And in verse 6, they came to Nacon's threshing floor. And you remember the account that Uzzah puts out his hand to the ark of God to take hold of it, for the oxen stumbled. And the anger of the Lord was aroused against Uzzah, and God struck him there for his error, and he died by the ark of God. Verse 9, David was afraid of the Lord. And so it went back to another one's house for a period of 3 months. And so you would think that David, in wanting this ark returned, he's celebrating and dancing and leaping in front of the cart that's carrying the ark. And then one of his own is struck dead. Because as happy and excited as David is, they all forgot one thing. This was about God, not them. And he was afraid of the Lord. David was not deterred. And he did make sure that the ark was brought in properly with the kind of respect and reverence that it deserved. And because of that, God sought a place for that. For a period of between 20 and 60 years, the people had not been treating the Ark of the Covenant the way it was supposed to be treated. David, when he establishes Jerusalem as being the center place, Zion, the place where God is going to be represented as dwelling, he does it in a way where it's on the border between Benjamin, which was the tribe of Saul, and Judah, which was his own tribe. And he made this little place that was conquered or controlled by the Jebusites, he conquers it, takes control of it, and he makes it the nation's capital. And he does it for a very good reason. Because when he settles that area as being the capital of all of Israel, he then goes to the northern border of Jerusalem. And there he buys a little piece of land. And I want us to look at what that piece of land was. 2 Samuel 24 and verse 24. This is right after David had made a census of all the people, where there's peace and there's a lot of things going on that's really good. And so David again forgets his place and begins to number the people as God had told him not to do. And a plague comes and destroys many of them. David is going to seek this as an occasion to beseech the Lord for favor. And so he buys this piece of land. This is in 2 Samuel chapter 24, verse 24. Let's go back to verse 18. And Gad came that day to David and said to him, go up, erect an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite. So David, according to the word of Gad, went up as the Lord commanded. And Araunah looked and saw the king and his servants coming toward him. And so he goes out, he bows before the king to the ground. Verse 21, why has the Lord my king come to your servant? David said, to buy the threshing floor from you, to build an altar to the Lord, that the plague may be withdrawn from the people. Now Araunah said to David, let my lord the king take and offer up whatever seems good to him. Look, here are oxen for burnt sacrifice and a threshing floor implements and the yoke of the oxen for wood. All these, O king, Araunah has given to the king. And Araunah said to the king, may the Lord your God accept you. Then David says this, no, but I will surely buy it from you for a price, nor will I offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God with that which costs me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. And there he built an offering. And so the Lord heeded the prayers. It's easy to look at that and gain from it a very important lesson. I will not offer to God something that doesn't cost me anything. Again, David was one who was going to take much care. He afflicted himself to make sure that he offered to God something which cost him something. But this place that he bought is really important. When you look at 2 Chronicles 3 and verse 1, we're told what this place is and its significance. 2 Chronicles 3 and verse 1. This is when Solomon begins to build the temple. 2 Chronicles 3 and verse 1 says, now Solomon began to build the house of the Lord at Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where the Lord had appeared to his father David at the place that David had prepared the threshing floor of Ornan, the Jebusite. Your footnote has that it's spelled differently, but that's the same person. Mount Moriah. You remember Mount Moriah? Mount Moriah in Genesis 22, when Abraham goes to offer Isaac as a sacrifice, it's on Mount Moriah. This is the place where the Lord will provide. Jehovah Jireh is talked about. This is the place where Jacob, when he has that, when he sees that ladder that's ascending into heaven, is mentioned in Genesis 28. In Genesis 28 and verse 17, notice what is even said on that particular occasion, which fits well with what we just read in 2 Chronicles. Genesis 28 and verse 17. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Mount Moriah. Mount Moriah is the mountain where Jesus Christ himself is sacrificed in the New Testament. How awesome, how great is this place? This is the place where when Isaac is being offered as a sacrifice and God stays the hand, because that's not a sufficient sacrifice, because God will provide. This is the place where Jacob, when he sees the ladder ascending into heaven, he knows that this place is an awesome place. This is the house of God. This is the place where David himself sought to make sure that he was not going to rest until God had a place, his place. And this is the place where he later provided for his place and his people in the offering of his son. David sought this place more than he sought rest and relaxation. It's a testament to how much David was actually a man who sought after God's own heart. You also think about in this particular psalm that it mentions that the mighty one of Jacob in Psalm 132 in verse 5, a dwelling place for the mighty one of Jacob. It's interesting that he doesn't say the mighty one of Israel. The mighty one of Jacob. The mighty one of Israel would give the idea and the impression of something that was already established, of people who had already prospered and went forth on the way in which God had sent them. The mighty one of Jacob, however, is the one who wrestled with God. The one who wrestled with God and would not let go until God blessed him. He held on tenaciously and tightly, and he was not going to be deterred until he received the blessing that God would give. That's who David was. That's what it means to be somebody who will go through much affliction to make sure God has the place where he is supposed to be. the place where he can be worshipped, the place where it would be without distraction, a place where he would actually be honored. David grew up in the midst of a generation of people. For some 40 to 60 years, he grew up in the midst of a group of people that had lost respect and reverence for who God was. They had forgotten. They had been crying out for a king. Give us a king so that we can be like the nations around us. And they had forsaken God as their king. They had treated the things of God as being common, ordinary things, as nothing but a good luck charm, something just to be turned to in the midst of an emergency, but not as an everyday part of their life. David wanted it back. And David sought to restore it. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he would defy the armies of the living God? God does not see as man sees, as all the other brothers are being paraded. But he looked at David and saw David's heart. David was the one who went out and sought the battles and made sure that even though he was not going to be the one to build the temple, that he did everything he could to make sure that everything was ready for the day that the building began. Dads, and as a dad, that is convicting. As a preacher of the gospel, as an elder, for our deacons, that's convicting. I will do everything within my power to make sure there is no interruption in making sure that God is held in reverence and respect. Once again, it's interesting as well that when you go to 2 Chronicles chapter 6, and that's what that should be on the screen. 2 Chronicles chapter 6. As Solomon is building the temple, and as it is about to be dedicated, 2 Chronicles 6 and verse 41 says this. See if this sounds familiar. 2 Chronicles 6:41-42. Now therefore, arise, O Lord, to your resting place, you and the ark of your strength. Let your priests, O Lord God, be clothed with salvation, and your saints rejoice in goodness. O Lord God, do not turn away the face of your anointed. Remember the mercies of your servant David. Keep your finger there and go to Psalm 132. David said he was searching for a dwelling place for the mighty one of God. Verse 6 says, Behold, we heard of it in Ephrath. We found it in the fields of the woods. Verse 7, Let us go into his tabernacle. Let us worship at his footstool. Arise, O Lord, to your resting place, you and the ark of your strength. Let your priests be clothed with righteousness, and let your saints shout for joy. For your servant David's sake, do not turn away the face of your anointed. The very words of this psalm are the words that were used as the temple was being dedicated. Arise, O Lord, and inherit your place. Dwell in your place. David made all things ready for that and afflicted his soul until it was found. It said in that psalm that we found, behold, we heard of it in Ephrath, which is another word for that area of Jerusalem. We found it in the fields of the woods. We found it. Sometimes the idea of being found is something that's incredibly gracious and exciting. Other times it's very sad. The Ark of the Covenant. We found it in the woods. We found it in the woods. You know why they found it? Because they lost it. They lost all that respect and all that reverence. Instead, it's supposed to be like the person, like in Matthew 5 and verse 6 that Sean talked about a few weeks ago, who hungers and thirsts for righteousness. I am so hungry that I'm about to die. I am so thirsty that I'm about to die. And yet there is only one thing that will fill me, and that is righteousness. It's like the man who's searching for that great treasure and that pearl of great price, that when he finds it, it's because he's looking for it. David was one who found it because he was looking for it. The others found it because it was out in the woods and they happened upon it. But regardless of the situation, just as it is in Matthew 13, do you recognize the value? We have found it once again. And I believe that's what this particular psalm is alluding to. We have found it, but we recognize what the value of it is. And so he then turns to the idea. Well, let's first go to 1 Chronicles 13 and verse 3. They had lost it and had become such a stranger to them. Then in 1 Chronicles 13 and verse 3, it says this about them. Let us bring the ark of our God back to us, for we have not inquired at it since the days of Saul. As I said, for a period of 40 to 60 years, they had not even inquired about God and what it was that He wanted. And so then they turn to this, let us worship. Let us worship. Let us go there. Let us bow down. Let us now inquire of God because we haven't for a long period of time. Let us go into this house of God and let us have joy because God has a resting place. God has a place where the entire nation can be unified and come together in one place with one heart, with one mind. What an appropriate psalm to be singing as they would go on their pilgrimage to remember that they are inquiring at the house of their God. The place where David did not rest until it was established. This was God's place, Mount Zion, the representation of where God Himself dwells, the mercy seat where God was understood to occupy amongst His people, the Ark of the Covenant that contained the tablets of stone in which the Ten Commandments were written on, and all the holy articles and elements. David made sure that everything was ready so that his son Solomon could build it. John 4 and verse 24 says that God is a spirit and those who worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth. There's no longer a Mount Moriah, but there is a Mount Zion. There's no longer the idea of a physical location as it was with Israel, but now that location is our very hearts and our very minds. We are that chosen generation, that royal priesthood. David himself, you remember, is the one who sought to make sure not only that all these articles were made, but he was the one who appointed the gatekeepers, the singers, the watchmen, all these different people among the Levites to carry off all these duties. He made sure everything was in place so that when God's appointed time for worship began, it was uninterrupted. Let us worship. We are that chosen generation because of the promises made to David. We are that royal priesthood because of the promises made to David. We are that holy nation, that city that cannot be hidden because of the promises made to David. And so remember, David, when we are the ones who said that we can offer the sacrifices and the praises, it's because of the promises made to David that we're able to do such things as that. I want us to conclude this morning with Psalm 27. Psalm 27. This Psalm of David. Verse 1 is our memory verse. Psalm 27 verse 1 says, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked came against me to eat up my flesh, my enemies and my foes, they stumbled and fell. Though an army encamped against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war may rise against me, in this I will be confident. One thing I have desired of the Lord, that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. To behold the beauty of the Lord, to inquire in His temple. For in the time of trouble He shall hide me in His pavilion. In the secret place of His tabernacle He shall hide me. He shall set me high upon a rock. And now my head shall be lifted above my enemies all around me. Therefore I will offer sacrifices of joy in His tabernacle. I will sing, yes, I will sing praises to the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me and answer me. When you said, 'Seek my face,' my heart said to you, 'Your face, Lord, I will seek.' Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my help. Do not leave me nor forsake me, O God of my salvation. When my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take care of me. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me in a smooth path because of my enemies. Do not deliver me to the will of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and such as breathe out violence. I would have lost heart unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be of good courage. And He shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. That is a testament of faith. That is a testament of a man who afflicted himself until he found a place, a dwelling place for God. My question this morning, has God found that resting place in your heart? That's where worship begins, and that's where it can be found. You remember David? We're so thrilled when we talk about David and Goliath and fighting that giant. But also remember David and how much trouble and how hard it was for him to be the one in the midst of that nation to bring about reform and restoration. The difference one person can make. Remember David this morning. Has God found a resting place in your heart? If He has not, you have a chance this morning to change. You can come back to the Lord. You can be obedient to Him in baptism. We can help you in any way that is necessary to help you get things right. Do you seek it more than rest? Do you seek it more than sleep? If so, please respond to the invitation as together we stand and sing.